have a desire, I think you'll agree. Most all good people have a desire to care what other people think about them. And I think maybe as you get older, that desire might increase. And you realize that as your days get shorter, you might care a little bit more about what people are going to think about you and how you have lived your life, what you may have passed on or not passed on to them. So I want to talk about a word this morning.
That doesn't work.
The word is legacy. About 10 years ago, I was asked to give a lesson on, and I gave this lesson, it's been modified some, but I was asked to give a lesson on what will your legacy be? And this was at the 150-year anniversary of the congregation that my mother's a part of. And the congregation had a weekend meeting, and this was part of the thought of the weekend. And the more I think about this, the more I think the thought of the weekend was about that congregation and about its members. And I think also it included the thought of Christ and the thought of God. And that's really what we should be concerned about. We should be concerned about the legacy of Christ and not my legacy. And when you think about it, what we're really talking about here this morning as Christians, if you're really concerned about what your children think about you and what others around think about you, then you really just need to be concerned about doing Christ's will, and they will think good things. The world, Mr. Webster anyhow, he defines legacy as personal property, money, and other valuables that are bequeathed by will, or anything that is handed down from an ancestor, predecessor, or an earlier era. Much of the world views your legacy or my legacy as what I might be able to give to my descendants after I'm dead. Now, a person comes to my mind that everyone that lives around here knows of, who is now dead, a very wealthy individual who put his stamp on Springfield, Missouri, and many other cities around the nation, and his last name was Hammonds. Very wealthy person. And he did some, what the world might call good things. And one of the last things that he did was he spent $32 million to build a ballpark. And his name bears that, as well as many other buildings in Springfield. And there's a statue of him. I would ask you, if you had $32 million, you think you could find better things to do with that than build a ballpark? How many homeless people you think you could help? Just something to think about, isn't it? Legacy is also describes the things that a person did or did not do in their life. Especially, and I put quotes around this, important people. And I just brought up a person that many view as important. And by the way, now that John Q. Hammonds is dead, do you think people really mourn his death? I'll tell you what they're doing. They're having big-time lawsuits over the money that's left. It's kind of like when you decide you're going to retire and you think maybe the people where you work at are kind of dependent on you and they're really going to miss you. And the day you say you're going to retire, they want to know how fast you can get out the door. And literally, in a month, if you work around a lot of people, in a month, there's going to be a lot of people that really don't even remember your name. I mean, really, they don't even remember your name. So we're really not too important. Back in the time of the Pharaohs, who were great rulers as far as wealth, power, and what have you, there was one of the Pharaohs was known by, there were several of them known by the name of Ramses. And when they built buildings, or when they carved hieroglyphs or reliefs on in stone, etc., they would put their Ramses, the whatever their number was, on there. Well, one was Ramses the Great, and he was very proud. And so whenever he came along, every other Pharaoh that had their name on something, he had it carved off. He had it knocked off and his name put there in place. He wanted to be known as the greatest. Well, what do you think his legacy might be? I would think it would be arrogance and pride. But we're taught in the Bible not to be overly concerned with handing down physical items such as property, riches, or possessions of any sort. Jesus didn't live that way. If we bear his name of a Christian, then we shouldn't be either. In Luke, the 9th chapter and the 25th verse, he said, "What does it profit you if you gain the whole world but lose your soul?" You know, the rich young ruler that came to Jesus was what we might call a good person, in that he had kept the Jewish law and he had become quite wealthy, but he lacked something that Jesus taught that was going to be required under the new law, and that was care and concern for your fellow human being and your brother or your sister. So he said, give up what you've got, give up your possessions, and then follow me. And we know that ruler couldn't do that because Satan had him by the throat. Satan had him by what he cared about the most, and that was his stuff. And we Americans have got a lot of stuff, don't we? We got too much stuff. So this morning, I would like for you to think with me in the remaining time that we have about, be concerned whether, you know, don't be concerned about your legacy. Be concerned about the legacy of Christ, and what your children and what your brothers and sisters think about you will take care of itself. Let's be concerned about passing on all things spiritual. And I've got three things that I would like to bring to your attention. One would be a good name. One would be bearing fruit. And the third would be continuing in the apostles' doctrine. Solomon said in Proverbs 22:1 that a good name is rather to be chosen than great riches, but rather loving favor instead of silver and gold. And I paraphrase that. Don't be concerned with money. You cannot buy what people think about you. Now, you can give them money, and they could go out and say nice things about you, and people pay other people to do that too. But do they really mean it? And the people they tell it to, do they really believe it just because somebody proclaimed it? No. A good name is brought about by years of service to God. It's brought about by proof of the good things that you do. And I would also go back to Proverbs, the 31st chapter, beginning in the 10th verse through the end of the chapter. There's 21 verses there. For example, if you want a good name and you're a woman, be a good woman. Be a good woman, as Solomon put, a virtuous woman. You can read that. Those 22 verses in 1 minute. And it very well describes not only what a woman of that time would be like, but what a Christian woman today would be like. And so, as if you're a parent and you have children, do you want your young boy to meet a Christian girl? Do you want your young girl to meet a Christian boy? Where are they going to find him at? Are they going to find him in the school? Probably not. I don't say definitely not. But where's the best odds of finding good Christian boys and girls? Where do they come from? They come from the church. And that's where they're going to find them. That's where they're going to meet them. And as parents, that's where we need to be concerned with putting them in a position where they can meet other good children. We need to be concerned about their spiritual welfare and not whether or not they're going to make the ball team. Not whether or not they're going to be wearing the nicest clothes. Not whether or not you're going to have enough money to buy them a car when they turn 16. Because Jesus said those things are not important. So we need to be concerned with what the legacy of Christ is in continuing. If we want to have a good name, and when your family name is mentioned around people you may not know, and they say, "Oh, I know your parents," or "I know your grandparents. They're members of the church," or "I've known them," or whatever. That means something, and it means something to them. And so if you've become a member of the church, and maybe your parents weren't part of the church, that's not a problem either. You be the one that starts that legacy. You be the parent that you start the good name that other people can talk to your children and say, "Oh, I know your mother or father. They're good Christian people." Number two, we're to be concerned with bearing fruit. And again, I'm talking about children here, and also those we meet who we may be able to convert, or we may be able to interest in becoming Christians. We bear fruit by the children that we raise. When you look at the church, for the most part, the church is our children of Christians. They're grandchildren of Christians. They're great-grandchildren of Christians. We have those among us whose parents are not Christians. And God loves each and every one of us the very same. And so some have an advantage of knowing about Christianity before. But those who come from outside also have an advantage of looking at things with an unbiased eye. Sometimes they can see things clearer than those who have been part of the church their whole life. But it is an advantage to raise your child in the church. Proverbs 22:6, Solomon said, "Train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. A wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish son is the grief of his mother." In Matthew, the 7th chapter, I'd like to read just a few verses here where Jesus was specifically talking about how you determine if someone is preaching the wrong thing, a false prophet is trying to deceive you. But it also applies to our life. And I'll start in Matthew 7:17. He says, "Even so, every good tree bears good fruit, but a bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor can a bad tree bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Therefore, by your fruits you will know them." You and I are known by our fruit. We're known by what we produce or what we don't produce. If we don't produce anything, as Jesus says in verse 19, it's going to be destroyed. So we need to remember this example of Christ. In Psalms, the first chapter, the first three verses of Psalms, David wrote, "Our righteous man is compared to a tree that grows by the water. How strong it is, how it spreads its branches." Also in John, the 15th chapter, verses 1 through 6, Jesus again used the example, not of a tree, but of a vine growing. And I think I'll go ahead and read that. We've got time. John 15, verses 1 through 6. I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away, and every branch that bears fruit, he prunes. Why? That it may bear more fruit. You are already clean because of the word which I have spoken to you. Abide in me, and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. He who abides in me and I in him bears much fruit, for without me you can do nothing. If anyone does not abide in me, he is cast out as a branch and is withered, and they gather them and throw them into the fire, and they are burned. We are the mouthpiece of Christ today. If we don't spread the gospel, it's not going to get spread. There's a whole world of people that don't even know that there's a Bible. When you turn on your television and you see the wars that are going on around the world, the generations of children that are born that never even know that this exists. All they know is the writings of some crazed person who says he was a prophet taken up into heaven and brought back. And that's what they give their lives for. That's what people are blowing themselves up for. And other things. That's not bearing good fruit, of course. But if we don't bear good fruit, then the legacy of Christ dies out to some extent. And ours personally sure does. But when churches close their doors, and there is no church in an area, say, or a community anymore, and it dies out, well, the light of the gospel goes out. And it's up to us to keep that going. The third thing that we need to be concerned about is continuing in the apostles' doctrine. In Matthew, the 16th chapter, in verses 18 and 19, This is one of the places where Christ gives authority to his apostles. And he specifically mentions Peter here, but we know that he gave authority to all the apostles because they were all given miraculous powers. They all spoke in different languages on the day of Pentecost. They all, as far as we know, were able to heal and do other things to make believers. But much of the religious world today believes that if you just accept Jesus Christ on your terms or my terms, whatever they may be, he will save us. They really don't include the teachings of the apostles at all. And I think sometimes we as the church may fail to realize how important the apostles' doctrine is. And I'm talking about the books of Acts through Revelation. Those are the ones. Well, they're all written by men inspired by God, but those are the ones that set out the doctrine of the church. What did Christ do to start the church? I mean, what are the maybe doctrinal things that he did? Well, he instituted his death, the commemoration, the remembrance of his death on the day on the Passover. He sang hymns with his disciples the night before. We know probably many, many times, but we know specifically after he instituted the Lord's Supper, they sang a hymn and went out to the Mount of Olives where he prayed and was betrayed. He taught them how to pray, didn't he? But did he tell them all of the things to do that we observe today? No, not specifically, but he gave them the power and the authority to set these things in order. And I think today sometimes we might not give them all the importance that we should. Let me read these few verses. Matthew 16, 17. Blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. And I also say to you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades shall not prevail against it. Now, listen to this. And I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. The doctrinal issues that the apostles set forth are, for lack of a better term, they are the law. They are the rules. They are the guidelines that we are to go by. And Jesus says, we're going to recognize that in heaven. God's going to stand behind you on this. So we need to make sure today that we continue in the apostles' doctrine. And, on the day of Pentecost and shortly thereafter, the new converts eagerly sought to do what was right. They gave up so much, many of them sold their land and possessions to give to those that didn't have. We're told in Proverbs, there's a way that seems right to man. In other words, when we depart from what God has said or the apostles have set forth, and we devise our own strategy to obey God, but the rest of that phrase is, that way is death. When we come up with our own strategy, we're going to lose. And then John stated at the very end of the entire Bible, at the end of the last chapter of Revelations, if you add to or take away from this book, you're going to receive the plagues written in this book. Don't do it. There is no more revelation from God. And then in Galatians, the first chapter, verses 6 through 9, Paul told the Galatian brethren, he said twice, he said, I don't care if it's an angel from heaven, if you think it's an angel or you don't. It appears to be one. I don't care how important this person thinks they are. If it's different than what we've taught you, let him be accursed. Okay? So we need to remember that today also. We are a part of the continuing effort of the church that's been in existence for 2,000 years, and it depends on each and every person here who's a member of the church to continue that on. So, in answer to our question, how do we pass on these things? Don't worry about your money. Don't worry about your house. Don't worry about your farm or your car or whatever. Is it okay if we do that? Well, sure it is. It's okay with God if we pass on things. It's also okay with God if we give them all away, like he told the rich young ruler. Have you ever thought about that? So, can you force anyone to do anything after you're dead? Well, that might be a loaded question. You might say no. But on the other hand, there's a way, but it's not the right way. You know, if you bequeath someone a fortune, but you put strings on it, and by law, if this person wants this fortune of yours, they have to do 1, 2, A, B, and Z. Well, you could control them to some extent, couldn't you? If they wanted your money or whatever it is you're giving them. But that's not what we're talking about here. Our legacy is not about us. It's not about me. It's about obedience to God and helping others find the truth. Our chance to pass on the legacy of Christ is while we're still alive. It's while we're still alive. And how do we do that? It's very simple. Live a righteous life. Just be righteous. Just do what God wants you to do. There's a popular statement. It's made in different ways, but I'll phrase it this way, that no one is dead, truly dead, until they're forgotten. Everyone here of age knows someone that's dead. We know many people that are dead now. Their bodies are gone. But are they really dead? They're not dead in your mind, are they? Because you still remember them. You remember the things they did. And you are doing some of the things that they taught you, if they're your family or close friend. You're continuing that. And that's what we're supposed to do in regards to Christ. Sadly, the world as a whole has forgotten the true God, if if they ever knew him. I don't believe that the world as a whole has never really known God. They know there is a God. Many people do, but they don't know him. It's important to us to know God, to continue, and to pass it on. And I will close this morning with Joshua 24 and 15. One of the things that we should be concerned about, especially fathers in our family, is the statement Joshua made, "But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." That's what should be first and foremost in our mind. And so, I guess, in a way, maybe I'm talking to the older people, but to the younger too. As you get older, be concerned about how your children will live spiritually and not if they'll have every comfort of man that they need, because that's not really important. So this morning, if you have a need, if you have strayed from God and you want to straighten things out, you have that opportunity. If you've never become a Christian, if you want to be a part of continuing the legacy of Jesus Christ and put your soul in on the pathway to heaven and eternal life, you also have that opportunity as we sing our closing song.
122 in the record.